Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
And I'm Ayan Bior, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, January 13th, 2016. The ruling SPLM party says it's willing to renegotiate the creation of 28 states and says the team monitoring the ceasefire is doing its work.
It is reported that, yes, they are moving and they are in the process of establishing the offices and branches all over South Sudan, and that they are actually monitoring the violations which might have been happening.
And the new WAU governor vows to keep his promise to improve security and implement the peace deal.
Then all those who are in rebellion are ready to come back. But why? They are afraid to come back. That they have made deployment from Awil Road to Raja Road to Tumbura Road.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The South Sudan government says it will negotiate with the SPLM-IO to resolve tensions over President Salva Kiir's controversial decision to create 28 states, something the regional bloc IGAD, its international partners, and the opposition say violates the August peace agreement. Government spokesman Michael McQuay says at a meeting convened by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission that the SPLM-IO, the government, and the former political detainees will work out a solution that's acceptable to all parties. Philip Thon Oleu has more for VOA from Juba.
McQuay says the third JEMEC meeting, chaired by former Botswana President Fitus Mogae, was fruitful, including discussions on President Kiir's order creating 28 states.
Also agreed that the issue of the 28 states is not actually a legal issue, but it is a political issue.
McQuay says the parties are not renegotiating the entire deal by discussing the 28 states as a political matter. The SPLM in opposition and former detainees, as well as the other main signatories to the peace agreement, have described the creation of the 28 states as a violation of the August peace deal, a deal that was based on 10 states. McQuay says participants also discussed progress made by the ceasefire and transitional security arrangement monitoring mechanism in observing the permanent ceasefire.
It is reported that, yes, they are moving and they are in the process of establishing the offices and branches all over South Sudan, and that they are actually monitoring the violations which might have been happening, except that they are facing difficulties in terms of mobility.
McQuay says they have had trouble reaching some areas where violations have been reported. McQuay says there has also been trouble on the National Transitional Amendment Committee, whose members disagree over the number of presidential devices there should be during the 30 months of transitional government of national unity. McQuay says if there are issues that cannot be resolved by the constitutional committee, the lead negotiators will intervene. JEMEC, which oversees implementation of the provisions in the peace agreement, yesterday asked the warring parties to submit names of ministers to be appointed to the transitional government of national unity by tomorrow. Those ministers are expected to be sworn in next week. The next JEMEC meeting is scheduled for early February. For VOA News, I am Philip Thona Leo in Juba.
On a blistering hot day in January, hundreds of ruling SPLM party supporters joined President Salva Kiir in a procession from the John Garang Mausoleum to the political party's council offices at Thong Pin in Juba to register the SPLM before Friday's deadline to register all political parties. Gift Friday has this report for VOA from Juba.
SPLM number one!
President Kiir, who normally rides in a convoy of expensive cars, mingled on the street with party supporters today amid tight security. He praised SPLM supporters for walking with him for 3 kilometers under the scorching Juba sun.
I'm standing here only to thank you very much for the support you have shown us. And I want to tell you that there is no easy struggle. See, the distance you covered up to the office and came back is a struggle itself. Thank you all for that.
Under the South Sudan Political Parties Act of 2012, all political parties willing to participate in any elections in the country must register by January 15th. Mr. Kiir appealed to his party supporters to campaign for him in the 2018 general elections in the country.
When it comes to the voting, these numbers you brought today increase more. Come cast them in my box.
Several SPLM party lawmakers were on hand to witness the registration process. Stephen Ajango, a member of parliament from Northern Bahr Al Ghazali State, says he is optimistic the party will be popular once again. He says the Agas peace deal agreement is an achievement of the ruling party.
The SPLM is taking lead for the reconciliation and forgiveness. The SPLM is taking lead for the peace and unity. No more war again. Enough is enough. Let us stop war.
SPLM supporter Akech Santo Deng says he is happy the ruling party is now a legitimate institution in South Sudan.
So today I'm very happy because SPLM is the first party to register. Also, I appreciate our president. He worked with us from the museum up to the political party's office. So this is very encouraging, and we encourage all the parties to do the same. In our country, we need all the parties to compete very fairly, and democracy will work in South Sudan.
Santino called on youths across the country to reconcile and stop preaching hate speech. The deputy SPLM secretary for the newly created Imatong State, Felix Okanyi, says the party is ready to compete with other political parties in the 2018 general elections.
If you don't register with the political party council, you won't participate in any general elections or any referendum. So we are so happy because at last we have achieved the goal which we have struggled to achieve.
The SPLM DC, which changed its name this week to Democratic Change, has complained repeatedly about the lack of democracy in South Sudan. Lama Kol, who leads the Democratic Change Party, has been challenging several government policies, including President Kiir's recent unilateral decision to create 28 states in South Sudan. This marks the first time political parties are registering in South Sudan. The SPLM was registered in the then Sudan in 2009 before the 2010 general elections. The South Sudan Political Parties Council has yet to release the number of political parties which have registered to participate in the 2018 elections. For VOA, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
The governor of the newly created Wau state says he will work to implement the peace deal signed by President Kiir and armed opposition leader Riek Machar, as well as reunite the state's different ethnic communities so that they can peacefully coexist. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Wau.
Elias Wayanyipoch made the remarks during a meeting with hundreds of SPLM members in Wau state today. He thanked the people for their warm welcome yesterday and says he will provide security while implementing the peace deal.
The president has stressed in his speeches, both in the new year and the extraordinary convention, on peace building and security and delivery of services to the people. What is needed from any governor is to prioritize the state's needs because you cannot achieve them at once.
Waya says he will work to reunite states' communities to ensure peaceful coexistence, something the state former leaders have failed to do. Wau State SPLM Chairman Mark Nyipoch Obango appealed to the new governor to withdraw government forces deployed around Wau Town in order to ease the movement for locals who, he says, are afraid of the military troops.
Then all those who are in rebellion are ready to come back. But why? They are afraid to come back. That you have, they have made deployment from Awiri Road to Raja Road to Tumbura Road. They are afraid of those folks. I said, why are you afraid of them? So a special request from you and your team. Please remove them out.
Over the past 3 weeks, several people have been killed, properties have been looted, and women have been raped, reportedly by the forces deployed in the area. Governor Waya says ending abuses against civilians by the military will be one of his top priorities. At the same time, Waya urged residents to welcome members of the armed opposition expected to become part of the transitional government of the national unity. He says they have a plan to reorient members of the SPLM IO so that they are aware of the changes made at the party convention.
We should bring their mindset back to the SPLM that we knew before the conflict. The advanced team of SPLM IO team and the former political detainees who participated in the convention have endorsed all the changes that came in our manifesto. The Arusha Agreement have been incorporated in the Constitution, and they have agreed and signed it. I think there is no problem again.
26-year-old Evelyn John, a mother of two, says she hopes the governor will fulfill the promises he is making to the people of Wau. She says citizens can no longer trust the government unless basic services are provided to the people.
My message to the new governor is that what he is promising people now should be fulfilled. It should not only be a word of the mouth.
John says if the new governor actually implements the promises he has made, the people of Wau will stand with him and Wau town will be better. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Prices of most basic commodities have quadrupled over the past year in South Sudan. The country's inflation rate reached 109.9% in December last year. That's a 100% jump from South Sudan's rate of inflation in December 2014, when it rose 9.9%. The surge is driven largely by an increase in food, clothing, and non-alcoholic beverages, according to South Sudan's National Bureau for Statistics, which says the price of food and non-alcoholic beverages increased by 130% since December of 2014. Dr. Lual Deng, the Juba-based Ebony Center's managing director, says the increase in the consumer price index will hurt South Sudanese already struggling to buy basic goods.
And especially in a country where about 75% on the conservative estimate is below the national poverty line, and the poverty line for South Sudan is $1.20 per day. If the prices have gone up that way, the person who will suffer is somebody on either fixed income or on what I've just said, living on that. And the market is the same for somebody who get who's getting at the end of the day compared to somebody who's getting $1.2 a day, that is the purchasing power, you can see and they buy from the same market.
Compared to December 2014, prices for furniture and other household items like plumbing increased by a little over 16%, while the price for dining in restaurants and staying in hotels increased by 96.5%. South Sudan's Bureau for Statistics blames the higher price for dining out on the sharp increase in prices for fish and seafood. More importantly, Deng says the fighting that broke out in December 2013 made big commodities scarce, driving up prices.
Not only that, the economy will depend, which is depending on oil as a major, or if not only, source of export or earning foreign exchange, but also for the government. Sources of revenue, which was before the war, over 90% relying on the revenues from the oil. And then oil has shut down from 300+ thousand barrels a day to 160,000 barrels a day. So you can see the magnitude.
The price of oil plummeted last year, which had a big impact on the purchasing power of South Sudanese consumers.
All these are giving pressure on the scarcity of the dollar, and the economy literally is importing almost everything from drinking water, bottled water, to whatever sugar, wheat flour, all those, you name it, cooking oil, soap, detergent, all those things are being imported. And so when the dollar becomes expensive, the dollar has become a commodity, which was sold at £3 a dollar to a parallel market where, as we speak today, is about 20 SSP. But this will go back maybe to the period you are talking about. You could say the dollar price in terms of South Sudanese pounds moved from 3 to 12 SSP. So that is already a big jump.
Deng says last month's decision to get rid of the fixed exchange rate should help to stabilize prices in the future. He says he believes prices for goods and services will eventually come down.
But in the short term, the very short term, over the, I still suspect, another 6 weeks, we still see some people attempting to try to increase, but they will have to come back to. So if you miss again from December 2015 to December 2016, I would guess that the increase will not that be big.
Fuel prices have especially skyrocketed since mid-December. South Sudan's state-owned Nile Petroleum Company said on December 17th that the recent decision by the Central Bank of South Sudan forced them to impose higher prices for fuel, which increased the cost of fuel at the retail level from 6 to 22 South Sudanese pounds per liter.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Why are health officials worried about the threat of a pandemic? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What time do you wake up in the morning and why?
I usually wake up at around 5 or 4. I don't really have a specific time. I wake up at 5 because I have to get ready for class.
I usually wake up at 5 simply because I've got so many things to do. Mostly I have to read before I go to class, so mostly it's 5 a.m. That's when I wake up.
I wake up at 4 a.m. When I was in high school, we used to wake up at 4 to get ready for classes. So that stayed in me until today.
At most, I wake up around 5. Reason being, because I sleep around 10.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Beginning in 2014, West Africa experienced the largest Ebola outbreak in history, affecting countries outside the region and bringing the threat of global pandemic to the worldwide consciousness. But Ebola is not the only disease caused by microbes transferred between animals and humans. As the global population continues to grow, so does the threat of a pandemic. VOA's Jill Craig reports from Nairobi on a new program aimed at detecting and preventing diseases that could become a pandemic.
At a hotel in Nairobi on Tuesday, the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization and the U.S. Agency for International Development launched the East African component of FAO's Emerging Pandemic Threats, or EPT2 program, to help detect, prevent, and control new zoonotic diseases, meaning those which can be passed between animals and humans. Suvash Morzaria is the global coordinator of the EPT2 program at FAO. He says these diseases can be transmitted through the air or by touching infected fluids or materials.
Whatever the mode of transmission, even if it could be transmitted by vectors, the point is that if these infectious diseases persist in our animal populations, then we have a constant risk of these diseases potentially becoming pandemic. Means causing huge, huge outbreaks and morbidity and mortality in humans and in animals as well.
Ebola is only one of the zoonotic diseases. Others include HIV and AIDS, influenza, including those commonly known as avian flu and swine flu, as well as SARS, MERS-CoV, Marburg, and Nipah. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, an estimated 6 out of every 10 infectious diseases in humans is spread from animals. And the humans keep multiplying. The United Nations projects that the world's current population of 7.3 billion people will reach 9.7 billion in 2050. And this rapid increase in the number of people means that the demand for food will also rise.
Now, these production systems will change very rapidly to meet this demand. And it's possible that some very risky practices in the production of livestock might occur. And these risky practices might create an environment for evolution of new pathogens and spread.
Kenya's Director of Veterinary Services, Dr. Kisa Juma Ngeiwa, adds that these new pathogens can be spread even further in today's mobile society.
Let me use the H7N9 influenza, which was in China. That is a disease, one of the influenzas on live bird markets. Now, if you look at the aeroplanes, Kenya Airways, Ethiopian Airlines, and others, they are going to China and they are coming to Kenya every day. So because of that, there is a big vulnerability unless we put measures to be able to see and stop it from spreading.
Aunt Morzaria says that everyone has a stake in the process.
Everybody's a threat. The virus doesn't distinguish between a poor and a rich person. That goes and infects and it kills that person if it's highly infectious and pathogenic. So I think that this is a global concern.
In October, USAID announced $87 million in new funding for the program. The money will be used to help governments and veterinary services better understand livestock systems, including the dangers of rapid growth, and to help conduct proactive surveillance, as well as identifying current and potential pathogens. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs is condemning the closure and destruction of a displaced persons camp in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The sudden development left several thousands of people with no place to live. For VOA, Nick Long files from Goma in Eastern DRC.
OCHA spokesperson Nadia Berger says nearly 4,300 people were living at the Makoto camp, about 70 kilometers northwest of Goma in eastern Congo's North Kivu province.
The site was burned down and the people had to move away and find shelter somewhere else. At the moment, we don't really know where they have gone. There's a team on their way to Makoto to monitor the situation.
Berger said the provincial authorities announced their decision to close the camp about a week ago on security grounds.
The provincial authorities told us is that the firearm was found in one of the huts, so they decided to close the camp because it's in contradiction with the civilian character of IDP site.
The head of OCHA in the DRC, Ryan Paulson, called the camp closure a collective punishment imposed on vulnerable people. Berger says OCHA and other aid organizations tried to delay the closure, but without success.
Our reaction and the reaction of the humanitarian community is that, of course, we would have liked to have more time to prepare for that. We're not against the closure of the camps, but we want to do it in a proper manner so we have enough time to let the displaced person decide where they want to go.
North Kivu has been racked by violence between the government and various militia groups for years. There are estimated to be about 600,000 displaced people in the province, of whom about 35% live in displacement sites. Local authorities have called for camp closure since 2014, and five camps were closed last year. But aid workers say there needs to be more cooperation from the authorities in the search for long-term solutions for the displaced, including more efforts to give them access to land they can farm. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab says the fusion of different technological advances, which are changing the world as never before, will be a major focus at the forum's annual meeting next week in the Swiss Alpine village of Davos. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WEF headquarters in Geneva.
More than 2,500 leaders in the fields of business, government, academia, civil society, the media, and arts will meet to debate matters of major import in Davos. As part of the formal agenda, more than 300 sessions will deal with critical issues involving global security, the refugee and migration crisis, geopolitical tensions, climate change, sustainable development, and the global economy. Taking center stage will be an in-depth discussion about what Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, calls the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Schwab says the revolution is being driven by advances in artificial intelligence, robotics, autonomous vehicles, 3D printing, nanotechnology, and other areas of science. He says people today do not have the luxury of time that existed in previous industrial revolutions to adapt to the rapidly evolving technological advances.
This fourth revolution comes on us like a tsunami. The speed is not to be compared with the last revolutions. And the speed of this revolution is so fast that makes it difficult or even impossible for the political community to follow up with the necessary regulatory and legislative frameworks.
Schwab says robotics, with new innovations such as self-guided cars, will destroy employment and wipe out much of the middle class, a major pillar of democratic systems.
My fear is if we are not prepared and we have a concentration of jobs in the high level, more innovative areas, and in the low service areas. And this could lead to a new problem of social exclusion, which we absolutely have to avoid.
Schwab says governments must put the necessary regulatory systems in place now to tackle the problems he expects will be brought about by these changes. Failure to do that, he warns, will lead to social tension and conflicts in the future. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Here is a recap of today's top stories. The South Sudan government says it will negotiate with the SPLM in opposition to resolve tensions over President Salva Kiir's controversial decision to create 28 states, a move that regional bloc IGAD, its international partners, and the opposition say violates the August peace agreement. Government spokesman Michael McQuay said at a Tuesday meeting run by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission that the opposition, the government, and the former political detainees will work out a solution acceptable to all parties. McQuay says the third JMEC meeting was fruitful. He says it was agreed that the issue of 28 states is not a legal issue, but a political one, adding that the parties have been directed to negotiate outside the box so that the issue is, in fact, resolved. McQuay says participants also discussed progress made by the team monitoring the permanent ceasefire. Under a hot sun today, hundreds of ruling SPLM party supporters joined President Kiir to march from the John Garang Mausoleum to the political party's council office at Thon Ping to register SPLM before Friday's deadline to register all political parties. President Kiir, who normally rides in a convoy of expensive cars, mingled on the street with party supporters amid tight security. He praised SPLM supporters for walking with him for 3 kilometers under the scorching sun. Under the South Sudan Political Parties Act of 2012, all political parties willing to participate in any elections in the country must register by January 15th. And finally, the governor of the newly created Wau state says he will work to implement the peace deal signed by President Kiir and armed opposition leader Riek Machar and reunite the state's different ethnic communities. Elias Wana Anya Poch made the remarks during a meeting with hundreds of SPLM members in Wau state today. He says he will provide security while implementing the peace deal. Wana says he will also work to reunite the state's different communities to ensure peaceful coexistence, something the state's former leaders have failed to do. That's a look at today's top stories, and that's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Yala Kita Wutu by Victoria Ole.
Yalla kita utu, yalla kita utu, yalla yalla. Yalla kita utu, yalla kita utu, yalla yalla. Kelly ni najere, yalla ni najere, yalla yalla. Kelly ni najere, yalla ni najere, yalla yalla.
We've been listening to Victoria Ole with the song Yala Kita Wutu. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.